The international coalition is acting under United Nations resolution that sets up a no-fly zone to prevent Libyan leader Colonel Muammar Gaddafi from using air power against the Libyans who have risen up against him. The resolution also authorizes member states to take all necessary measures to protect civilians and civilian-populated areas under threat of attack. Experts say the coalition has already successfully imposed the no-fly zone over Libyan airspace. They say Colonel Gaddafi's air force is pinned to the ground and his air defense system is largely destroyed. But Ward Carroll, a former Navy radar specialist who flew an aircraft patrolling earlier no-fly zones over Iraq and Bosnia, says it is far easier to establish a no-fly zone than to sustain it.
Let's imagine we're doing this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I would submit that's the amount of level it's going to take to do this right. Traditionally, the Libyans don't fly at night, so you could probably reduce your level of effort, you know, after dark, but you still need early warning aircraft, you still need other support aircraft, and you need airplanes that are ready to react in the event that the pro-Qaddafi forces do fly and continue to attack the rebel forces after dark.
Carroll says the military hardware needed to successfully patrol the no-fly zone goes beyond jet fighters.
It's the assets that support those airplanes, so that takes Harrier jets and Cobra helicopters, and then the tanker assets that keep those airplanes airborne. So there's a lot, not to mention the entire command and control structure.
And, says Carroll, the operation is expensive.
The cost estimates around the initial wave of strikes is $1 billion, and then it takes something between $100 million and $300 million per week to maintain a no-fly zone.
But despite the effort and costs, analysts say there is little evidence that coalition airstrikes on Gaddafi's forces have prevented them from attacking civilians. Retired Air Force General Mike Dunn commanded airmen who patrolled no-fly zones.
If the mission is what it seems to be, which is protecting Libyan civilians, then protecting them from aircraft is only part of the mission. The other part of the mission is to protect them from Libyan ground forces. And that's a completely different mission that we haven't seen much action on thus far. And it's much more difficult.
Mark Ginsburg, former U.S. ambassador to Morocco, agrees with those who say air power has its limits.
The real dilemma is that we have already succeeded in imposing a no-fly zone, but the battle is really taking place on the ground in urban areas where a no-fly zone is not going to stop mortars and tank shells from flying into opposition strongholds. And so the no-fly zone was a great idea 3 weeks ago, but it's no longer an applicable aspect of trying to prevent a humanitarian challenge no matter where you are in Libya.
So the question now is, say experts, would ground forces be necessary to stop civilian casualties? Not U.S. forces, says Ambassador Ginsburg.
I think it would be an unmitigated disaster for the United States to put ground troops on the ground. Let the French do it. The French were the ones most interested in starting this conflict with Gaddafi, the French Foreign Legion on the shores of Tripoli.
Many analysts, such as Ward Carroll, say there is little political appetite in the United States to send ground troops to Libya after Iraq and Afghanistan.
And this also has a fiscal component, right? We don't have the money in the face of these deficits and this job unemployment situation to be involved in this for too very long. But we'll see.
But despite the difficulties, Carroll says when innocent people are being killed, the American people do not want to stand idly by. Andre Dineshner of VOA News, Washington.